Mr. Shaw, Reel 3. We're talking about your time at Fisgard at Chatham. What about sort of kit inspections and preparing your uniform and your kit for inspections? Would you have to do that in the evening?
I'm just trying to think now. We used to have what they call a kit muster, where you had to sort of lay out all your kit, usually on your bed and your locker. I can't remember offhand how often that happened. Sometimes it would happen if you were in trouble as a punishment, but there was also a bit of a routine as well. And if you were, for instance, on a Sunday when we were all at divisions, all fell in on the parade ground, all dressed up in our number ones, etc., etc., and you'd be inspected. And then if you were picked up for something, you looked a bit scruffy or your boots weren't polished properly or something, then they might, you might have to do a kit muster then, you see.
And how would you prepare for a kit inspection or a, you know?
Well, you'd have to get all your kit out and lay it out on your bed and a lock, and then and it was usually the officer of the watch or someone who'd come round, or your own divisional officer. Each class had what they call a divisional officer, you see, and he might come round, or he'd come round with one of the petty officers as well, you see, and they'd just check up that it was all, to see first of all whether it was all there, whether you hadn't flogged any of it, and what state it was in, you see, and that was about it. But I can't remember exactly how often this happened, to be quite honest. But it happened anyway.
Now, what about special events? You mentioned Sunday. Did you have a church divisions and church parade?
Yeah, that's right. At the start, when you joined, they would ask you what religion you were. Well, 90% of us were C of E, Church of England, you see. But you got the odd, you know, Roman Catholics or Presbyterians or different sort of. Right, now, so the Church of England people would all fall in and we'd all be marched down. So they had the main church was in Chatham Barracks. So that was only about a 10-minute march, you see. And we'd all go in there on the Sunday morning, and they'd have the padre, we'd get up and do the service, and then we'd all march back. And then after that, if I remember right, this Sunday, I think, that was it. Your time was your own, more or less, on a Sunday. And then, of course, if you were in the cricket team, you'd probably be playing cricket in the afternoon or whatever, depending on what part of the year it was, and so forth and so on, and that was a bit. But they had billiard tables and table tennis. You could play billiard, table tennis, and that sort of thing, and darts, you know, all that sort of thing. When you had the chance to get on them, and so everybody seemed to.
Was there any gambling, cards or gambling?
We used to play cards, but not gambling. You didn't have, well, our wages for the first year was 8 shillings, this is old money I'm talking about, a fortnight for the first year, and then it went up to 10 for the second year, and then we had a fantastic rise for the third year, it went up to 18 shillings, and then it went to 22, I think, and then for the last 6 months, 26 shillings a fortnight. God, we were throwing it around like nobody's business. Mind you, we had our food, was all, you know, didn't have to pay for your food or lodgings, but yeah, so we gambled, but we'd be gambling with matchsticks or something like that, you see. And we played all sorts of games, poker, all the lot. I used to be quite good at cards up until about, a long time ago, I suppose it must be in the 40 or 50. I was pretty good on the Calder, one of the things I did do on
there. We'll come back to that then. Yeah. Now, what about your second year? You've been selected as a boilermaker.
Yeah.
Now, so what did that mean? Did you go down with everybody else to the training establishment?
Yeah.
How did your training progress? Do you see what I mean? The stages.
Yeah, all right. Well, as a boilermaker, I would still march down with the rest of them, and then they'd go in the main building, and then further up, there were three of us in my class, the boilermakers, and we'd go into the main dockyard shop where all the dockyard people were working, the boiler shop in there. Terrific din too. And there were two instructors, and if I remember rightly, one of them would take the starters, that when you first start, you see, up to a certain level, and the other one would take you from then on, and also one of them would be more expert at the welding than the other one, and so that one would teach you the acetylene and the gas welding, you see.
Now, what did you have to learn? Because I'm not sure what you have to learn as a boilermaker. Can you run through what you had to, you know, grasp?
Well, I'll give you, this won't be in the correct order, but we had to learn how to re-tube, put tubes in a boiler that had burst or had holes in. You know, on a ship, they didn't have a ship's boiler there, but they had a dummy so that you could do the job. And then they...
How did you do that then? Retube a boiler?
Well, you had to... They had what you called an expander, which was... You had the tube, for instance, but when we were in the dockyard boiler shop, you didn't have a whole tube, you'd only have a part of a tube. And that you'd fit that into the hole, and then you'd have this tool, what they called an expander, which fitted into there, and as you worked, it was a ratchet thing, it would expand the tube into the until you got it right, and then you'd have to test it, water test it, to make sure it didn't leak. And that was that's the basic idea of it.
So that's one thing. What other things did you have to learn?
Well, the welding, of course, and grinding. Oh, and shear.
So what about welding? Take a bit about each one. What did you have to learn about welding?
Well, the welding, you do the acetylene, and they would show you how to weld different thicknesses of steel plates. You have to use a different method with a thin plate than you would with a thick one, and they teach you where to hold the correct distance away, you see, otherwise you'd burn a hole in the metal. With the electric welding, of course, that was a bit trickier, because you have a rod, you see, and when you switched on the machine, electric machine, you'd have the rod would just touch, you had to have the knack of just touching the metal correctly and then running the rod along, and very often it would stick and sometimes the machine would stop. So they taught, the idea the instructors were to teach you how to do that correctly, you see, and this is what happened. So that by the finish, by the time we'd finished our training, and we were all reasonably good.
What about, you said grinding, what was that?
Yeah, well, you had the old grind, you know, the old grindstone. Well, how can I describe it? You've seen people sharpen a chisel on a grind, well, that sort of thing, you see? And might be doing that with a bit of metal as well, you see? And cutting metal plates, various thicknesses, but usually not more. If they were thin plates, say 1/8 of an inch thick, and you'd have a hand shear, you know, but you'd have to do it in a straight line. Oh, and the boilermakers were issued with what they call a chalk line and reel. And what happened there was you'd have this chalk line, which you would chalk. And then one of you would stand at that end of the plate, and the other one at this end, pull the line taut, and then just pull it up, flick it, and then you had a straight white line. At least you're supposed to straight white line, and that and then you'd put that in a machine to cut through it. That was the idea, you know, sort of give you the. But if it was a, well, you'd do the same if it was a thick bit of metal, but you'd have to do it on a big machine then, and usually that would be in the main dockyard shop. You'd have to go along and get permission to use that. But so cutting metal, and what else? There was something else I thought of then with the metal. Heating it up to a certain heat. And then we had blooming great flogging hammers. We had to, the hammer was as big as me, nearly. Great big flogging hammers. And chipping out very often rivets, great big rivets. They rivet the rivets in the side of ships. We didn't do it on the ship, but practicing to, and you'd have a great big chisel in a drum, and you'd have somebody at one end holding the chisel, and you're at the other end, and you had to hit it dead right, otherwise you couldn't. In the end, you got the knack of it. You did it dead right. When I look back on it, I think, how did I wouldn't like to try it now. I wouldn't like to try any of it now.
Anything else you had to learn? That's really good.
I'm just trying to think what else was there in that. But the trouble was, we didn't use it once we got on board a ship. Well, hammer and chisel, chipping off old rusty nuts and bolts if you couldn't use a spanner on it. We'd be quite expert at that sort of thing. And the one thing they taught you, most people, when they're using a chisel, they hold it like that. They get the chisel, hold it like that, don't they? And you're more likely, if you missed, and the correct way is like that. So
with your hand underneath it.
If you missed, you hit the fleshy part of your hand. And so we learnt that quickly enough, because when we did our first whack that I was telling you about earlier on, we didn't know that, you see, and we were bashing, and the instructor would come up and say, hold the chisel this way. But of course it took a long time to get used to it. And what else was it they taught us? All sorts of things I can vague. Now and again, to drill. You know, an ordinary drill, the sharpener drill. They had a special instructor. And honestly, I must have been the worst ever they'd had up there doing a drill. I could never get it right. And before I'd
what were you doing to the drill? Sharpening it.
Yeah. Before I'd finished, there was no drill left, and he used to go raving mad as he gave up the ghost. Eventually, there's always one, isn't there? And I was the one this time.
Was it an electric? What type of drill was it?
Just an ordinary drill that you would use. You could use it.
A hand drill.
Yeah, a hand drill, or you could use it in an electric drill. But it was the sharpening part of it. And I could never, and I never have been able to get that. Well, of course, I've not tried it since, but I could never do that. Much to the great roars of laughter from most of the others when I was trying to get it. No, I never could, but there you are. It's one of those one of those things. So they would never give me a drill to sharpen it. But there, I mean, that's the way it went.
What about things like using lathes?
Yeah, well, we did them. Of course, it was the fitters and turners who did most of it, but we all had a go at it. We all had to have a go so that we could. And I wasn't too bad. You know, I wouldn't say I was an expert, but I could do it. You know, they taught you how to use the lathe, and that was it. We did. We all had a go at that.
Now, would you actually build a boiler?
No. Well, that's the point. You see, this is what I was trying to get at earlier on.
But did they train you to build
the
one?
No, the boiler making business was complete nonsense. And when you got on a ship, that was it. The only thing that would happen would be, as I said, if you had a, and it very often happened, leaky tubes in a big boiler, then the boiler maker would do that. He would be the one responsible for.
So how would you do that?
Well, you'd have to chip the old tube out, you see, and you imagine a great big boiler's on a ship, huge. You'd chip it through. See, that's what you were taught. You could chip it through at the bottom, and then you would drive that bit out. You'd have a special tool to drive it out, and then you have to do this at the top. you drive it down that way, and someone else will be there in the furnace. The furnace wouldn't be alive. They pull the tube out, you see. And depending on how many tubes there were, and then you get the new tubes and gradually put them in one after the other and use what I was telling you earlier on, the ratchet thing, and then they test it, make sure there were no leaks, and away you go. But this sort of thing, it didn't happen all that often, you know. It was just.
And how long did this training as a boilermaker take? I mean, was that?
Four years. Yeah, the first 6 months was general. Then after that, it was 4 years. The coppersmith would do. No, coppersmith. Now I could see the point in that, because that was a useful sort of a job, and they could do all sorts of things on board a ship. You see, and then the engine smith one was waste of time, really. They were usually supposed to be big chaps as well, but it didn't often work out that way. But I think eventually they did alter the system. They still had the fitters and turners, but I got a feeling that they did away with this boiler making Skylark and also the engine smith. But I'm not too. But the coppersmith, I always thought afterwards, I said, now that would have been the thing to have hopefully got into, really, and that would have been useful outside as well. But there you are, that's the way it goes. Right, so where are we at?
Anything else about your training there then? I mean, that basically, once you've done your 6 months, the other classes, B to J, were just grafting away at this boiler making.
Well, and then, but there was the schooling as well and the engineering. And then after the first 2 years, you had a school test and also a trade test.
And so, tell us, what about the school test first?
Well, the school test was mainly, I'm just trying to remember, maths. It was mainly maths, English. Mechanics, I think. I'm not quite, magnetism and electricity, I'm not quite sure, but
And they were a sit-down
engineering
test, a paper examination.
That's right. And then you do that after the first 2 years, and if you didn't pass that, you were put back a class. But most always passed.
And what about the trade test?
And the trade test.
What were they for the boilermaker?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think out what the first trade test was. Actually, I can remember the last one. I can't remember the first one.
What was the last one then?
I might get it later on. The last one, we had all sorts of things to do. We had to do what they call a joggle, a joggle patch, which was never used at all.
What was it? A joggle?
Joggle, yeah. J-O-G-G-L-E patch, which was riveted. It's the seams of an old-fashioned boiler, imagine. And if there was a leak, this joggle patch was supposed to seal the leak. Well, we had to make one of those from a lump of, and it was all a matter of banging and crashing with great big flogging hammers and whatnot, and then drilling the holes, make sure the holes were dead right, and then that would be riveted. They had a special drum for our training, you see, and then that would be riveted on. You have a man in the drum holding a big hammer this end while you were belting. The rivets were all red hot. And it wasn't done by machine, it was all done by hand. And then they test it eventually, fill the drum up with water up to a certain pressure, never look round to see whether there are any leaks. And then that would be marked by one of the instructors. And then there was a welding test where you had to weld two pieces of metal, thick pieces of metal. You had to cut a V first, like that, so you get the weld in. And then they would not only test it, they'd test it in a machine, pull it to see if they could pull it apart in a big machine. And not only that, they'd see whether the welding looked, if the welding looked beautiful, you've got more marks, you see. and a plate work. Now, what was the plate work we had to do? A thin plate. We had to make something with steel plate. Which, in other words, you had to be good at drawing as well, mechanical drawing. You had to be able to draw the thing out, sketch it out properly, and then make sure it fitted. And then, did we have to weld it up on the end or rivet it? Little rivets, I forget. But we did that sort of thing as well, little rivets. And there were sort of things like that. That was our passing out test. And they'd all be marked, and then you'd get a total. And of the three Boilermakers who were there, the one who was the best, and he always was the best, unfortunately he's died now, he got what was it, about 70-something percent, which was pretty good in those days. And he also got 6 months accelerated promotion and a prize. He won the prize. Ah, they had a prize. They had a prize for the fitters and turners, and they had a prize for the what they called the outside trades: coppersmith, enginesmith, boilermaker. Only one prize with, and this boilermaker chap, he got that prize. He won that. The other chap and I, we finished up dead level practically on the mark. We had about 60-something percent, which was good enough to pass, you know. So we passed out all right. So.
And what rank were you when you passed out?
We passed out as a... do you know anything about the ranks in the...
Well, if you explain it...
Well, if you start off with, say... we'll take the seaman branch. You start off with an able seaman, then the next one up is a leading seaman. And he's got one, what they call a hook, an anchor on his arm. Well, it's a similar thing, except that... we had this hook, but we were called, instead of being artificer apprentices, we were then a fifth class ERA, engine room artificer. Right. Now, after 1 year, or 6 months if you got accelerated promotion, and some of them got 3 months, but normally it was 12 months. After 12 months, providing you passed another examination, you became a petty officer, or an acting, actually it was an acting petty officer. Then after another 12 months, when you passed another interview and another written examination, you were confirmed. That was confirmed petty officer. And then after that, in the engine room branch, if doing your watchkeeping down below, you see, in first of all in the boiler room and then in the engine room, you see. And when you were deemed to be capable of taking charge of a watch in the engine room, not just going down, taking charge of a watch, you know, the people, then you could apply for your engine room watchkeeping certificate. And you usually saw the senior engineer or somebody around, they'd ask you a few questions, or you might have to do it. And if you passed it, then you were then rated to a chief petty officer. Not a chief ERA, but a chief petty officer. And after that, the next... Is this all right?
No, it's good to have a review of the system. Yeah,
the next thing in line would be a chief ERA. Chief ERA was still a chief petty officer, but he would be in an ERA's mess, depending on the size of the ship. I mean, the first ship I joined was a battleship, the Resolution.
We'll come to that. Keep going with
the... Well, the other bit. Well, a chief ERA would be in charge of all the other ERAs. Well, put it this way, he would be a superior to all those, you see. And then after that, of course, the next jump would be to... the officer branch and the way up there, you see.
Now, so anything else about you when you finished at HMS Fiskard? What month did you finish? You'd started in January 1934. You were there.
Yeah, no, we finished, if I remember rightly, June. The end. We were given summer leave. We had leave. I don't know whether it's 2 or 3 weeks. And then we reported back to Chatham, well, depending on what barracks you were going to. Oh, you were allocated different barracks, by the way. Usually, depending on how well you did in the exams, you had a choice of Portsmouth, Chatham, or Devonport. Now, the majority of people opted for Portsmouth. I don't know why, but they did. And usually the second choice was Chatham and third Devonport.
This was your home port.
That's right. So I opted for, the three of us all opted for Portsmouth. Well, of course, the one who got it was the chap who, as I told you just now, won the prize. He got Portsmouth. Now, I and the other chap both got Chatham. It could have been one Chatham and one Devonport, but we both got Chatham, you see. So that's how they allocated the ports when we finished. Right. So then we all went on leave. I think it was 3 weeks leave.
And when would that be? When had the course finished?
June.
1938.
We'll say the end of June 38. I don't know the exact date. And then we 3 weeks leave, report back to, in my case, Chatham Barracks, but it could be Chatham, Portsmouth or Devonport. But we're on about me now, are we? Right. So then, you report back to Chatham Barracks, and then after not very long, a couple of days, you were told where you were going to go to, an HMS Resolution, a battleship. And there were six of us from my class, fifth class EOAs, who were all allocated to HMS Resolution, which at the time was based in Devonport, or was at, actually, Devonport Dockyard. So away we all went by train. It was ever so hot. I always remember that, hot and sticky. And, well, of course, we had...
And this would be July, then?
Yeah, July. It's July when we joined the Resolution.
And what happened when you joined ship? I mean, because, you know, it's quite a complicated thing.
Well, we had hammock, kit bag, toolbox, and a great big green case which weighed about a ton. You had to hump those on by yourself. So we had to do all that, and then you report to the master at arms on board the ship. He's the, you know, the policeman sort of business, the person. And then to the... In our case, to the president of the EOA's mess, which happened to be an old... Well, we thought he was old. He was about 48. But, well, when you're only 20, someone of 48 is old, isn't he? Report to him. See, and then he would allocate you where your sleeping billets were, et cetera, so forth and so on. And then you... I'm not quite sure about this. Obviously, the senior engineer... You know, the senior engineer would have to know that you're on board then, so he would have to be notified. So presumably the chief ERA, there were six chief ERAs on there, by the way. So the senior one of those would be the one to notify him. And then he would organise your different duties from then on.